إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد. So inshaAllah ta'ala, we're going to continue with the lessons in tafsir taken from the works of Sheikh Muhammad bin Saleh Al-Uthaymeen rahimahullah ta'ala. Last week we discussed Surah Al-Fatiha and some of the meanings within Surah Al-Fatiha. And this week now, we're going to start with Juz Amma, the small surahs from the back that many of the people have memorized, many of the kids will have memorized, the elders will have memorized. So we'll start with those surahs now, starting from the end of the Mus'haf, Surah An-Nas to begin with. But just like we said, inshallah, we'll hear some memorized recitation from the kids. So, who can recite Surah An-Nas? From the kids who are under the age of 12, 11. Go on then. Excellent. That's one. Anyone else? Abdul Rahim, you want to go?
Okay.
You're 12? Okay, from 12 and under. From 12 and under in that case, we have to get you in. Go on then.
I want to do it.
Okay, go on, you can do it. Sit down, you can do it. Next to you. Go on then. Excellent. Anyone else? Qasim. Last one. Go on. Excellent. Excellent, mashallah. Prize for those four. Next week, inshallah, we'll bring you a prize for those four who recited. And next week again, we'll test you on the next surahs, the ones that we're going to do next week. So everybody should memorize as you go along. So to start with now then, Surah An-Nas. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ مَلِكِ النَّاسِ إِلَهِ النَّاسِ مِنْ شَرِّ الْوَسْوَاسِ الْخَنَّاسِ الذي يوسوس في صدور الناس من الجنة والناس. This particular surah then, it begins with the statement of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ. Say that I seek refuge in the Lord of men. Say that I seek refuge in the Lord of all of the people. قُلْ, say, أعوذ, that I seek refuge, I seek protection in Allah, I seek refuge in Allah, I seek shelter in Allah, برب الناس, I seek the refuge and the shelter in the Lord or with the Lord of all of the creation. I seek refuge in Allah, the Lord of all of the people. Malik al-Nas, the king of all of the people, the one in control of all of that dominion. Ilah al-Nas, the god of all of the people, the one who is worshipped by everyone. Min sharri al-waswas al-khannas, from the evil of the whisperings of al-khannas, the shayateen. From the evils of the whisperings of the shayateen. Alladhi, or the shaytan. Alladhi yuwaswisu fi sudurin nas, the one who whispers in the hearts of the people, min al jinnati wan nas, from the jinn and the people. We'll come to the explanation of that now. So firstly, it begins with قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ, that say, I seek refuge in the Lord of all of the people. Seeking refuge in Allah, then that is a sign of Tawheed. We know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created us to worship Him upon Tawheed. Tawheed meaning that every aspect of worship, every type of worship that you do, all of that is directed to Allah alone. Every type of worship is directed to Allah alone. So similarly, seeking aid and help, seeking refuge and protection, then you do that in Allah. You seek the aid and the protection in Allah. Because if you do not have your trust and dependence in Allah, and you do not seek the aid and protection in Allah, then you will fall into a deficiency in Tawheed, and you will fall into the various aspects of shirk. Just like it's mentioned in the Quran, that in the olden times, when they used to go traveling, in the times of Jahiliyyah, when they used to go traveling, and they came to a valley or a mountain, and they knew that the jinn live in these valleys and mountains. So when the people traveling would arrive at these deserted places, these valleys and mountains, and they needed to pass through them, they needed to pass through them to carry on with their journey. But they knew there's jinn living there, and they were fearful that these jinn may harm them as they go through. So what they would do, when they would arrive at the valley or this area, when they would arrive there, they would seek protection. But who would they seek protection in? In the times of Jahiliyyah, when they were on those journeys and they arrived at these valleys, then they wouldn't seek protection in Allah. When they arrived at those places, it's mentioned in the Quran, وَأَنَّهُ كَانَ رِجَالًا مِّنَ الْإِنسِ يَعُوذُونَ بِرِجَالٍ مِّنَ الْجِنِّ. They would get there and they would call out to the leader of the jinn. The people who were traveling would call out to the leader of the jinn in the valley. And they would ask for protection from the leader. They would say to the leader of the jinn, make sure that you aid us and you help us and you make sure that the other jinn don't harm us. They would seek protection in the leader of the jinn to allow them to pass through. This was what they used to do in the times, that they would seek their protection in the leaders of the jinn, asking them to protect them from the other jinn in the valley. And that was something that is incorrect. Rather, we have been commanded to seek the protection in Allah. Whatever the affair may be, whatever the difficulty may be, then your trust and your dependence and your reliance, it is in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So here Allah says, say, أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ, that I seek protection, I seek the refuge in رَبِّ النَّاسِ, the one who is the Lord of all of the people. Just like in Al-Fatiha we read last week, أَلْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ, that Allah is the Rabb of all of the creation. Here it mentions that you seek refuge in Allah, who is the Rabb of all of the people. So this indicates the rububiyyah of Allah. And that's why when we say that Tawheed is those categories, or it is understood in those categories, Tawheed al-rububiyyah, the Tawheed which indicates that all of those actions that are specific to Allah, then only Allah does them, and you do not attribute them to anyone else. So creation, the fact that all of this heavens and the earth have been created, then as a part of the Tawheed al-Rububiyyah, you say that it is only Allah who created all of those heavens and the earth. The giving of life and death, it is only Allah who gives the life and death. the providing of the sustenance and the food and the provisions. Only Allah does all of that. So this, when you say Rabb, Rabbil Nas, then you are affirming the Rububiyyah of Allah. You are affirming that it is only Allah who is able to perform those actions, and you single out those actions and associate them to Allah alone. So, قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ. As Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen, rahimahullah ta'ala, states, وَهُوَ رَبُّ النَّاسِ, that Allah is the Lord of all of the people. وَغَيْرِهِمْ, and other than the people. Not just the people, even besides the people, everything. Then Allah is the Lord of them. رَبِّ النَّاسِ وَرَبِّ الْمَلَائِكَةِ وَرَبِّ الْجِنِ. Allah is the Lord of the people, and the Lord of the angels, and the Lord of the jinn. All these are different types of creations that Allah has made. There is the creation of the people. Allah created us from clay. There is the creation of the angels. Allah created them from light. There is the creation of the jinn. Allah created them from the smokeless fire. All of these are different creations of Allah. And Allah is the Lord of all of them. وَرَبِّ السَّمَاوَاتِ, and Allah is the Lord of all of the heavens. We spoke previously regarding the heavens, the different levels of the heavens, and how between one level to the next level is hundreds of years of difference. The different heavens, Allah is the Lord of all of them. وَرَبِّ الْأَرْضِ, and the earth, that Allah is the Lord of the earth. And in the Quran it mentions that Allah created the seven heavens and seven earths similar to it. Or rather, the earths similar to the seven heavens. So the scholars, they say there are seven earths. But what does that mean? The ayah says Allah created the seven heavens and earths just like that, i.e. seven earths. So some of the scholars, they say, perhaps there are other planets like the earth. And some of the scholars, they say, perhaps it means the continents on the earth. And some of the scholars say, perhaps it means the levels of the earth, the mantle and the crust and the core and all of those types. But nevertheless, Allah is the Lord of all of that creation. وَرَبِّ الشَّمْسِ, and the Lord of the sun. And رَبِّ الْقَمَرِ, the Lord of the moon. And that, especially when you read the story of Ibrahim alayhi salam, and how the people, they used to worship the sun, and some of them they used to worship the moon, and some of them they used to worship the stars. And Ibrahim alayhi salam, he refuted them upon all of that, because the sun and the moon and the stars, they are created. They are created by Allah, and they are from the creation of Allah. They are not deities or gods to be worshipped. And that's why we are prohibited to pray at certain times. It is not allowed to pray at the time of sunrise, and at the time of sunset, and at the time when the sun is at its zenith. Because the times of sunrise and sunset, they were the times when the sun worshippers used to prostrate. So we are not allowed to pray the supererogatory prayers at those times, other than the prayers that are of specific reasoning, as the scholars, they mention some of them, such as Tahiyyatul Masjid and other prayers of that nature. So here, when you say قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ, I seek protection and refuge in the Lord of all of the people, then you mean the Lord of everything, that Allah is the one in control and the one who created all of that. وَرَبِّ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ, and Allah is the Lord of every single thing. Remember when we spoke about the rububiyyah, the ayah in the Quran, it says وَمَا تَسْقُطُ مِنْ وَرَقَةٍ إِلَّا يَعْلَمُهَا, that there is not a single leaf that falls off any tree on the face of the earth anywhere. All of the trees that exist, the Amazon rainforest and all of the other trees everywhere, here and outside in the UK, Europe, the world, not a single leaf falls off any tree anywhere except that Allah is aware of that. This is the rububiyyah of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So here you say that I seek my refuge and my protection in Allah, the Lord of all of the people. Malikin Nas, the king, the one in control, the one who owns and controls all of that dominion. Malikin Nas, ay al-malik alladhi lahu sulta al-ulya fi nas, i.e. the one who has the superior kingdom over all of the people. Because on the day of judgment, as we said last week again, Maliki Yawmiddin. And what did that mean? Maliki Yawmiddin. The owner of the day of judgment, meaning Allah is the one who will have the absolute kingdom and dominion on that day. No other individual will have any share of kingdom or dominion on that day. Allah is the one who is the sole in control, the king of all of the affairs. So here, Malikin Nas, i.e. the king of all of the people, the one in charge and in control of all of the people, the one who decides what occurs, the one who has that decree upon the people. Ilahin Nas. Qul a'udhu bi Rabbin Nas, Malikin Nas, Ilahin Nas, the God of the people. Ilah, Ilahin Nas, Ilah in Arabic, it indicates Al-Ma'luh, the one who is worshipped. Ilah, Allah, then the meaning of that is the one who is worshipped. Aliha ya'lahu Al-Ma'luh in Arabic. Abada ya'budu Al-Ma'bud, meaning the one who is worshipped. So Allah, the actual name, Allah, it means the one who is worshipped. So Ilahin Nas, the one who is worshipped by the people, the one who the people, they direct their worship towards, every aspect of worship, whether it is worship in the hearts, whether it is worship on the tongues, whether it is worship on the limbs, physically, every aspect of worship, it is directed to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So the one who is truly deserving of worship, that is Allah. That's why when you say, La ilaha illallah, that there is no deity, no God, worthy of worship in truth, except Allah. There is no God or deity worthy of worship in truth, except Allah. What about the gods and deities otherwise? Do they exist? They exist. People will consider that they exist. They will say, some people on their religions, that they have 1,000 gods. A god for everything, they'll tell you. A god for the rain, and a god for the sunshine, and a god for the night, and a god for the day. A god for everything. Some of them will tell you they have thousands of gods in their religion. So, all of those gods, they will tell you they have them. But all of those gods, no matter how many they say they have, even if they claim them to be gods, they are gods that are false. They are false gods, not deserving of worship. That's why the meaning of La ilaha illallah is that there is no God deserving of worship in truth except Allah. As for other gods who are false and not deserving of worship, yes, the people will say they exist and they will claim them. But the one true God deserving of worship upon truth is Allah alone. Ilahin Nas. Min sharri al-waswasil khannas alladhi yuwaswisu fi sudurin nasi min al-jinnati wan nas. So what are you seeking protection and refuge in Allah from? So far you said, or the ayah says, say that I seek protection, refuge in the Lord of the people, the king of the people, the one who is worshipped by the people. But from what? What are you seeking the protection in Allah from? That is what's explained here now. Min sharril waswasil khannas. From the one who whispers to the people. The shaitan who whispers to the people. Al-muwaswis. The one who, as Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen says, ما يلقي في القلب من الأفكار والأوهام والتخيلات التي لا حقيقة لها. You are seeking refuge in Allah from the shaitan who comes and he whispers to you all types of things, imaginary things, all types of deceitful things, things that have no reality to them, things to confuse you, things to cause you worry and concern and grief. He comes and whispers all of these types of affairs to you. So you seek refuge in Allah from the shaitan who comes and whispers these affairs into the ears and into the hearts of the people. Al-Khannas, قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ مَلِكِ النَّاسِ إِلَهِ النَّاسِ مِنْ شَرِّ الْوَسْوَاسِ الْخَنَّاسِ. From the evil of the whispers of Al-Khannas. And Al-Khannas, that is the shaitan. Al-Khannas is the shaitan, the one who is defeated. Al-Khannas, the one who is defeated, the one who is not able to burden the Quran and not able to burden the remembrance of Allah. Just like it mentions for the one who recites Surah Al-Baqarah in their homes, then the hadith says, لَا يَسْتَطِيعُهَا الْبَطَلَةِ, that the shayateen, the devils, they cannot handle hearing Surah Al-Baqarah being recited. They cannot handle that. لَا يَسْتَطِيعُهَا الْبَطَلَةِ. They can't handle hearing Surah Al-Baqarah. So the Quran is something heavy upon the shayateen. Shaykh al-Islam Ibn Taymiyyah, he used to mention, he mentioned that the magicians, which we're going to come to in a moment too in the next surah, the magicians, they used to fly on their carpets. Ibn Taymiyyah, he mentioned it. The magicians used to fly on their carpets with the help of the jinn and the shayateen. They used to fly on their carpets. But Ibn Taymiyyah, he mentioned, if a person who had the iman in his heart, had the taqwa, the iman, the tawheed, and he recited the Qur'an, Ayatul Kursi, the greatest ayah of the Qur'an, he recited that upon this magician flying on his carpet, with the jinn, the shayateen who were helping him, when they hear the recitation of Ayatul Kursi coming from this person who has iman and tawheed, they'll collapse from the sky, they won't be able to hold up the carpet. That is the strength of the Qur'an upon them. So here, you are seeking refuge in Allah from the shaitan who whispers to the people all types of things, all types of false things, all types of deceptive things, all types of ideas and imaginary affairs. You seek refuge in Allah from that type of thinking and that type of affair to enter your heart and to busy you and to grieve you and to take you away from that which is of importance. As Shaykh al-Uthaymeen says, the shaitan, he comes, for example, the one who whispers to the people in their prayer. So the one who is praying, then perhaps the shaitan, he comes and he whispers to that person. To such an extent, the shaitan may whisper to this person and say to him, think about something, think about such and such. Think about what you're going to do after the prayer when you leave the mosque. Think about what you're going to do when you get to that place tonight. Think about the plans you're going to make for next week when you go there. To such an extent, the shaitan comes and he tells the people to think here and to think there. With the whispers, the person forgets how many raka'at he's prayed. If he's on the second one, he's on the third one, he's on the fourth one. He can't remember anymore from the whisperings of the shaitan, taking away his mind from the focus of the prayer. And that's why it's mentioned in the hadith in Al-Bukhari and Muslim, that perhaps the shaitan will come and say to you, udhkur kada, udhkur kada, think about this, think about that. لِمَا لَمْ يَكُنْ يَذْكُرْ حَتَّى يَظِلِّ الرَّجُلْ لَا يَدْرِي كَمْ صَلَّى. To the extent that the man, the person praying, will no longer remember how much he's actually prayed. And this is something which afflicts the people, something which afflicts the people a lot. And many people, they ask about it, that during the prayer, my mind, it drifts away. During the prayer, I don't focus. Then this, what we're doing right now, is one of the cures to that. Understanding the speech of Allah is one of the cures to that. Because when you understand the ayat of the Quran, when they are being recited and you're in the prayer, or yourself you're praying and you're reciting them, then you have a focus because you understand what it is you're reciting. You understand what the speech of Allah means. You understand what these ayat are talking about, so your mind can focus. As for a person who hasn't got a clue what they're reciting, they just memorized, but they don't know at all what they mean, then he will recite from his mouth and his mind will be somewhere else. So one of the ways to focus is to understand what you are reading and what you are reciting. So here, that is what will occur, insha'Allah ta'ala, through understanding the speech, the tafsir, regarding these ayat. Similarly, when you seek refuge in Allah from the shaitan who whispers to the people, it's not just whisperings in the prayer, it's not just whisperings here and there with imaginary things that cause you to become concerned or worried. It could be something even greater than that. It could be sort of hallucinations. It's possible. It's mentioned by the scholars that perhaps when individuals are traveling out in the wilderness, especially as they used to do in those times, traveling out in the desert, no city, no village for miles and miles, and you're traveling along somewhere, and it could be that after a time that you have been traveling, and you've not spoken to anyone for a while, you've not seen anybody for a while, there's been no cities, no nothing, the shaitan, he comes to those people, it's mentioned. He may come and take that opportunity, because this person traveling and tired, and in a state of weakness, hasn't seen anybody for a long time, they haven't had any contact, no other people, no villagers, out in the desert traveling. Shaitan comes and takes the opportunity, it's mentioned to such an extent, that he will cause them, whisper to them, that they start imagining seeing things. So they start to imagine seeing something, like a scary beast or something in the distance. And it's the whisperings of the shaitan to them. They may imagine seeing some other type of thing in front of them, some other type of thing over there. And it's all whisperings from the shaitan. And this can occur, that the shaitan, he causes that to occur through the whisperings to the hearts of the people. That they're out there alone in a group perhaps traveling, and then they start hallucinating these things. Or as you say, hallucinating, yani the shaitan, he comes and he whispers and they begin to imagine these things. The scary beasts or whatever they may be. So when you seek refuge in Allah now, you are seeking refuge from these whisperings of the shaitan that can impact upon a person and that may cause his mind to divert away. Then at the end it says, مِن شَرِّ الْوَسْوَاسِ الْخَنَّاسِ الَّذِي يُوَسْوِسُ فِي صُدُورِ النَّاسِ. The shaitan who whispers in the hearts of the people, مِنَ الْجِنَّةِ وَالنَّاسِ. From the jinn and the people. You seek refuge in Allah from the whisperings of the shaitan of the jinn and the shaitan of the humans. Because the shayateen, the devils, there can be devils of the jinn and there can be devils of the humans. Because the jinn, as you know, when we say the shayateen of the jinn, then only some of them. Because some of the jinn are Muslims. Some of the jinn are Muslims. And they practice the religion of Islam. They are Muslims, some of the jinn. But some of them, they are shayateen. And it's the same with humans. It can be said, as the scholars they have mentioned, that some from the humans are shayateen. They are devils from the humans. So you seek refuge in Allah from all those types. From the jinn, the shayateen of the jinn, and the shayateen of the humans, who come and perhaps whisper to you affairs, or put ideas in your head that are incorrect and false, and they misguide you. So, as for the jinn, seeking refuge in Allah from the whispers of the jinn, the shayateen of the jinn, then that's clear. Because in the hadith it mentions that the shaytan yajri fi ibn Adam or min ibn Adam majra dam. That the shaytan, he runs through, flows through the humans like the blood flows through a human. Shaytan flows through the humans like the blood. It flows through the humans.
And that's why, as Shaykh Al-Fawzan, he mentioned, that when you fast, then that restricts the shaitan. How come? Because when you fast, then the veins and the arteries and the flow of the blood and the water in your body, it becomes restricted. Because of a lack of food and a lack of water, the flow in your body, it becomes restricted. And so that restricts the flow of the shaitan also. So the shaitan flows in the people, يعني has that close connection and is able to whisper to the people. As for the humans, the shayateen from the humans, then again, as Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen says, مَا أَكْثَرَ الَّذِينَ يَأْتُونَ إِلَى الْإِنسَانِ يُحُونَ إِلَيْهِ بِالشَّرِ. How many people are there out there who will come and speak evil or give you evil speech from the people? يُزَيِّنُونَهُ فِي قَلْبِهِ. They will come and beautify things to you. Make them beautiful to you. Make you think that such and such is a good thing to do, or such and such is a nice thing to do. And in fact, those are misguidances, or they are innovations, or they are other affairs of shirk that are post-tawheed. But these people, they come and they beautify this speech to you. So the Shaykh says, you seek refuge in Allah to protect you from all types of whisperings of that nature, to protect you from all types of misguidances of that nature. And that is, in summary, what Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen mentions regarding Surah An-Nas. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ. Say that you seek refuge in Allah, the Lord of all of the people, Malik An-Nas, the King, the one in control of all of the people, who does as he pleases. إِلَهِ النَّاسِ, the one who is worshipped by the people, the God of the people, the one worshipped by the people. مِنْ شَرِّ الْوَسْوَاسِ, from the evil, you seek refuge in Allah. From the evil of the whispers of Al-Khannas, the one who is the shaitan, the defeated one, the shaitan. الَّذِي يُوَسْوِسُ فِي صُدُورِ النَّاسِ, the one who whispers to the chests, the hearts of the people. مِنَ الْجِنَّةِ وَالنَّاسِ, whether they are the shayateen of the jinn or the shayateen of the humans, then you seek refuge in Allah to protect you from their whisperings. And that is, as the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said in a hadith, إِحْرِصْ عَلَى مَا يَنْفَعُكَ وَاسْتَعِمْ بِاللَّهِ وَلَا تَعْجِزْ. Be keen upon focusing on that which benefits you. Be keen on focusing on that which benefits you. Focusing upon that which brings you benefit. It's beneficial for you in this world and in the hereafter. Then have enthusiasm and focus on clinging to those things. Things that will benefit you. وَاسْتَعِمْ بِاللَّهِ, and seek aid and assistance in Allah to do so. وَلَا تَعْجِزْ, and do not become weak. Don't become weak, and don't become grieving and sad and depressed, like you can't do anything. Don't become weak in that way. Rather, have your focus on the things that are going to benefit you. Seeking the righteous knowledge, acting and obeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Have your focus on that, and have the strength, and seek aid and assistance in Allah to focus and to carry out that. And not to become weak like some of the people they become. Shaitan comes and whispers to them. He whispers to them maybe things from the old. That thing happened 10 years ago. That thing happened 5 years ago. That thing happened 2 days ago. And you're sat there thinking, and your mind is gone here and waving around. And you forget. And you are taken away from the things that are important to you. So instead of being able to sit there and study the religion and read a book, or listen to a talk of one of the scholars, or attend a gathering of knowledge, then you find the people sat there depressed, sat there and saddened and grieving, because the shaitan has overcome them with thoughts of this and thoughts of that, and their mind wanders on this issue and that issue. So don't be drawn away from the shaitan to draw you away in that way from that which benefits you. And so here Allah tells us to seek refuge in Him from the whisperings of those shayateen. After that, Surah Al-Falaq. Surah Al-Falaq.
So who can recite Surah Al-Falaq? One person volunteer, Surah Al-Falaq. Go on then. Excellent. So that is Surah Al-Falaq. Surah Al-Falaq. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ. Say, I seek refuge in the Lord of the dawn break. Say that I seek refuge in the Lord of the dawn break. مِنْ شَرِّ مَا خَلَقِ. From the evil of what he has created. وَمِنْ شَرِّ غَاسِقٍ إِذَا وَقَبْ. And from the evil of the darkness of the night when it comes. وَمِنْ شَرِّ النَّفَّاثَاتِ فِي الْعُقَدْ. And from the evil of those who blow in the knots. وَمِنْ شَرِّ حَاسِدٍ إِذَا حَسَدْ. And from the evil of the envious one when he envies. So this is similar now from the previous surah, continuing with a similar type of theme. Whereas Allah is now telling us again regarding seeking protection and refuge in Allah from a number of other things. So it begins, قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ. Say that I seek refuge in the Lord of Al-Falaq. That is the dawn break when the sun arises. Al-Falaq. Allah is the Lord of the Falaq. The Lord of the dawn break, just as Allah is the Lord of everything. So here the example is given of that dawn break. When the sun, it arises in the morning. Say that I seek refuge in Allah from that dawn break. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ. And it's possible that the meaning is more general than that. It's possible the meaning is more general than that. But the point being that you are seeking refuge in Allah once again, the Lord of the dawn break, or more than that. مِنْ شَرِّ مَا خَلَقْ. From the evil of what he has created. Meaning that there are certain things within creation which are evil. There are certain things within creation that are evil. Even though, as a general rule, we say that the evil things in creation, they are evil from our perspective. They are evil from our perspective, but not attributable to Allah as evil. Meaning, a scorpion or a poisonous snake. You're walking in the desert somewhere and you see a scorpion or a poisonous snake. Or, when we used to live in Saudi Arabia, you open up your bedroom door and there's a scorpion there. As it happened on more than one occasion. So these scorpions and snakes, they are there and they are around. You may think, what's the point of scorpions and snakes? They are poisonous. They bite you. They can harm you. They can kill you. You think this is just an evil thing. But it's evil from our perspective. We view that as evil because that's all we understand from it. But from the angle of it being created by Allah, then it's not, as we may say, evil in that way. So, the point being here then, you are seeking refuge in Allah from the evil affairs in creation. And from the greatest of the things that can bring about evil is what? As Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen, he mentions here, from the greatest of the things that can bring about evil in creation, أي من شر جميع المخلوقات. And one of those, one of the items that can bring about evil in creation is yourself, your own self. وَمِنْهُ النَّفْسِ. Your own self. لِأَنَّ النَّفْسَ أَمَّارَةٌ بِالسُّوءٍ. Because your own self, it guides you or it wants to do evil. It is inclined to affairs that are impermissible. Your own self, it has desires
and it has affairs that it's inclined to do, things it wants to do, but it's haram. So your own self, it takes you towards things which are not correct to do. فَإِذَا قُلْتَ مِنْ جَمِيعِ الْمَخْلُوقِ مِنْ شَرِّ مَا خَلَقَ فَأَوَّلُ مَا يَدْخُلُ فِيهِ نَفْسَكَ. So when you say that you seek refuge in Allah from the evil affairs, then the greatest of those, or the first thing that enters into that, is your own self. You seek refuge in Allah from the evil of your own self. Seek refuge in Allah and seek protection in Allah from the evil of your own self. The evil of your own self that can lead you to committing affairs, to desires, to doubts, to other things. And that is just like you mention in the khutbatul hajah. In the khutbah, it is mentioned, na'udhu billahi min shururi anfusina, that we seek refuge in Allah from the evil of our own selves. You seek refuge in Allah and you seek protection in Allah from the evil of your own self that it can lead you to. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ مِنْ شَرِّ مَا خَلَقِ وَمِنْ شَرِّ غَاسِقٍ إِذَا وَقَبٍ. And from the evil of the غاسق. What is the غاسق? وَمِنْ شَرِّ غَاسِقٍ إِذَا وَقَبٍ. And you seek refuge from the evil of the ghasiq. Anybody know what the ghasiq is? That you seek refuge from the evil of the ghasiq. Wa min sharri ghasiqin idha waqab. So, al ghasiq, it is, as it's mentioned, the night, the darkness of the night. The night is ghasiq, or the moon, because the moon comes out in the dark as well. The point being that during the night, when the night it envelops and the darkness it overcomes, then typically that is a time when danger lurks. When night overcomes and darkness envelops everything, then when you're out somewhere, you've got a more likelihood of the poisonous animals and the scorpions and all types of things being out there. When the night overcomes and the darkness is everywhere, you're walking along somewhere outside, there could be a dangerous animal that comes to you. There could be other things of danger during the night in the darkness. So here you seek refuge in Allah from that darkness when it comes and it envelops everything and it covers everything. And it becomes dark outside and the shayateen, they come out. And the animals and the dangerous animals and other affairs, they may be out at that time at night too. So, إِنَّمَا كَانَ غَاسِقًا لِأَنَّ سُلْطَانَهُ يَكُونُ فِي اللَّيْلِ وَقَوْلُهُ مِنْ شَرِّ غَاسِقٍ إِذَا وَقَبْ مَعْطُوفٌ عَلَى مِنْ شَرِّ مَا خَلَقْ. So you seek refuge in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from that time, that darkness which overcomes due to the various affairs of evil that may occur during that darkness. During that time of darkness, the shayateen, they come out. And the other affairs of the evil animals or things that may harm you, they may be around in the time of darkness and have more possibility of overcoming you. So you seek refuge in Allah from that time when the darkness envelops. And that's why it's mentioned, close your doors and your windows after the darkness and keep your children inside. These types of narrations are mentioned. So here you seek refuge, min sharri ghasiqin idha waqab, from the night when it appears, when it overcomes the light and everything becomes darkness. Then, wa min sharri nafathati fil uqad, and also from the evil of an-nafathat, the ones who blow into the knots. Who is that? What does it mean you seek refuge in Allah from the ones who blow into the knots? Magic and the magicians. The magicians, they have various ways of performing their magic. When they perform their magic, they use the shayateen, the devils of the jinn. And the devils of the jinn, They make the magicians do all types of things. They make the magicians commit shirk. And when the magicians commit shirk, then the jinn help them to do all types of weird things. They help them to float in the air and to walk on water and to do all types of things that you would typically not be able to do. How do the magicians do those things? From the help of the devils of the jinn, the shayateen of the jinn. But why would the shayateen of the jinn help them in the first place? Because those magicians, they commit shirk. And they worship the shayateen. They'll prostrate to the shayateen. It's mentioned true stories of magicians who have been caught. One particular magician, he was caught. And in the place where he was staying, his home, inside the shayateen, look at the things they had made him do for him to be able to be a magician. Inside, there were feces everywhere. Feces everywhere all over the place. Meaning he wasn't using the toilet. He wasn't using the toilet when he needed to relieve himself. The shayateen had made him do everywhere. On the floor, everywhere, all over the walls, everywhere. Shayateen made him do that. To live in that disgusting place like that. Then they had made him write ayat of the Quran in of all of this mess. This is the shirk and these are the types of things. They will make them prostrate to them. They will do other things. And the magicians, they commit the shirk and other forms of that until they can become magicians. There's a true story of a particular magician mentioned by one of the scholars. He said there was a person who had a neighbor that was a magician. There was a person living somewhere. And his neighbor was a magician. He could do all types of weird and wonderful things. Or rather, they're not wonderful, they are shirk. But things which are outside of the norm, that is what's meant. So, the neighbor himself, when he saw that his neighbor can do all of these magic tricks and everything, he wanted to be like him as well. So he went to his neighbor, the magician, and he asked him, "You're a magician, you can do all these things. How? How do you do it? I want to do it too." So the magician said to him, "Go to a particular lake at the time of Maghrib. Go to this particular lake at the time of Maghrib." This is a true story. Actually occurred with somebody and one of the scholars narrated it. "Go to this particular lake at the time of Maghrib." So that person, he says, "I went to the particular lake where my magician neighbor told me to go at the time of Maghrib." Why do you think the magician had chosen the time of Maghrib? Because like we said, at Maghrib time, the sun, it goes down. Those people, those mushrikeen, they used to worship when the sun goes down. And then it becomes dark, the shayateen, they come out. So he picked the time of Maghrib for him to go. To go to this lake. So the person, he says, "I went to the lake." When he got to the lake, the magician had told him, "When you get there, you'll get your next instructions." When he got to the lake, he says, the fish, they came to the edge of the lake and they popped up from the water. The fish, they came to the edge of the lake and they popped up from the water. And they started talking to me. And one of the fish, or the fish, they said to him, "The first thing you need to do then, if you want to become a magician and all of that stuff, the first instruction, your first instruction is, now it's the time for Maghrib, Maghrib prayer, miss it. Miss the Maghrib prayer, then once you've missed it, we'll go on to the next stage." It was time for Maghrib. They said to him, "Your first instruction is, you're not allowed to pray Maghrib. Miss your Maghrib prayer. Once you've missed that prayer, then we'll go on to the next stage." But the man, he narrates, this particular individual, "When I got to that level, and the fish, they told me to miss the Maghrib prayer," even though he obviously wasn't that educated and he didn't know the reality of the affairs, he wanted to be a magician. He said, "When they told me to miss the prayer, that was enough for me." He said, "Because even from a child, my parents had taught me about the prayer 5 times a day. And they had taught me to pray 5 times every day without fail. From a child." So he said, as soon as they said, "Miss the prayer," he said, "straight away, I got scared. I realized this is wrong. How can I miss a prayer?" And he said, "I ran away." That was a true story. So look at the magicians, what they make you do. The very first instruction he got was, stop praying. Stop praying and then we'll move on to the next parts. So you can't be a magician and be a person of Tawheed. Impossible. Magicians, they get to where they are through shirk, through committing shirk. And that's the same with all of these fortune tellers and the ones who have the cards, the tarot cards and the different types of cards and the magic balls, as they call them, the fortune balls, and they read your palms. All of those types of people, they are upon this corruption, and we've been warned against them and to stay away from them. That narration that we've mentioned before, how the shayateen, they climb on top of each other's backs until they can reach some information from the heavens. Then they come and tell these fortune tellers, and then those fortune tellers will confuse the people with their lies and that one truth. So all of these magicians, all of these people, they use these types of things. And there are various different methods. Various different methods these magicians use. And it's true. All of this is true and it is noted and it is realized. For example, they have the dolls. They make a doll and then they will poke needles into that doll. They have a name for this in English, I forgot. Ouija and that kind of stuff and voodoo and whatever they call it. They have dolls and they put the needles in the dolls. That is real. Magicians do that. That occurs from magicians that they will make these dolls. Where they have caught magicians in the past, they have found these dolls with needles and things in their homes. So that is something that they actually do. And these types of knots, that they will tie up knots and they will blow into the knots and all these types of affairs, the magicians do those things to impact upon people. So here when Allah tells us now, that you say, I seek refuge in Allah from what? Min sharri nafathati fil uqad. From the evil of those magicians and the corrupt ones who blow into the knots and they use these other forms of magic to have an impact upon the people. Perhaps the magic can even kill people. Perhaps it can have an effect upon them where they become ill. It can have other effects. However, it should be noted and the people should be aware. Sometimes you hear people and they say, I need ruqya doing. I need to see someone. I've got magic on me. You ask them, what's your symptoms? And when they describe the symptoms to you, it turns out that actually there's no magic. It's just a cold. They've got a cold, they got a few aches and pains, they feel a bit dizzy when they wake up, all of a sudden it must be magic. Not necessarily. Take a couple of days rest and this imaginary magic of yours will disappear. As Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen, he used to say, people have too many, that's really what we were talking about now, whisperings. Too many whisperings as well. Sometimes it could be nothing. No magic, no nothing. Sometimes a person is genuinely just ill. Has some dizziness, has some other pains, aches, fever. Maybe it lasts for a while, the dizziness. It could be problems in the ear sometimes, it causes dizziness. Nothing to do with magic. But the people, their imagination and the whispers, they lead them straight away. It must be magic. If this bad thing has happened, it must be magic. But Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen, he explained, you shouldn't be like that. Don't allow whispers to overcome you. It's not straight away everything that happens, it must be magic. But nevertheless, it does exist, and sometimes it could be. So here Allah tells us to seek refuge from those who blow into the knots and they do the other affairs to cause magic upon the people. Then the final thing that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentions in this surah, وَمِن شَرِّ حَاسِدٍ إِذَا حَسَدٍ. To seek refuge in Allah from the evil of the one who envies. The one who envies you. To seek refuge in Allah from the evil of the one who envies you. And who is the one who envies? Min sharri hasidin. The hasid, as Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen says, Al-hasid huwa alladhi yakrahu ni'mata Allahi ala ghayrih. That is someone who hates that Allah has given a blessing to somebody else. Somebody else has got some blessing. They've got something you haven't got. So this person, he has this hatred in his heart that this person's got that thing and I haven't. Envy. He envies that this person has been given the blessings and he hasn't been given that particular blessing. That is envy. فَتَجِدُهُ يَضِيقُ ذَرْعًا إِذَا أَنْعَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَى هَذَا الْإِنسَانِ بِمَالٍ أَوْ جَاهٍ أَوْ عِلْمٍ أَوْ غَيْرِ ذَلِكَ فَيَحْصُدُهُ. So the Shaykh says, you will find somebody, maybe this person, you will find him, that he becomes extremely agitated. Becomes extremely agitated. And becomes extremely uncomfortable. Because such and such has got money. And such has got status and position and respect. And such has got knowledge. That he becomes envious of that person. And he has hatred of that person. Because that person has those things and he hasn't got them. Rather, as Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen used to say, then you do not behave in that way towards the blessings that people have been given. The blessings of Allah are great. وَإِن تَعُدُّوا نِعْمَةَ اللَّهِ لَا تُحْصُوهَا. If you enumerate, try to count the number of blessings Allah has given you, then you'll not be able to do so. So if you see that a person has blessings that you do not, then it is not befitting and correct for you to envy that person. Not at all. Rather, you thank Allah. You ask Allah and you make dua to Allah for that person for those blessings. You ask Allah to put barakah into the blessings that person has been given. And you ask Allah for dua for yourself. That is what you do. Make dua for yourself and make dua for the person who's been given the blessings. Ask Allah to put barakah into those blessings that he's been given. Not to have envy and hatred because Allah has bestowed upon him something that you have not been bestowed with. As Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen says though, there are two types of people who envy. One type of person may envy somebody else and have hatred towards that person and the blessings that he's been given because he's richer than him or he's got some status or whatever it may be, but he won't actually do anything to that person. He envies him and he hates the blessings he's been given that he hasn't been given. He envies that type of thing, but he won't go and do anything. But then there is another type of person who will actually carry out some affair from this envy and this evil that he has. نَوْعٌ يَحْسَدُ وَيَكْرَهُ فِي قَلْبِهِ نِعْمَةَ اللَّهِ عَلَى غَيْرِهِ لَكِنْ لَا يَتَعَرَّضُ عَلَى لِلْمَحْسُودِ بِشَيْءٍ. So one person is a type of person who has the envy and he's agitated, but he won't actually go and do anything. But the second type, وَالشَّرْ وَالْبَلَىٰ إِنَّمَا هُوَ بِالْحَاسِدِ إِذَا حَسَدْ. But the evil really comes from the one who actually performs his envy. He actually does something with his envy. It performs his envy. And that's why Allah said, you seek refuge from the envious when he envies. وَمَنْ حَسَدَ الْحَاسِدِ الْعَيْنَ مِنْ حَسَدِ الْحَاسِدِ الْعَيْنَ. Because what can happen from the envy of a person? The evil eye. From the envy of a person could occur the evil eye. And the evil eye is something real. These are affairs that occur. And this is despite the nonsense of some of the so-called scholars. And in reality, they are scholars of evil. As Shaykh Al-Fawzan and Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen have mentioned, there are people out there who are scholars of evil. They are not scholars of the Sunnah. They are not scholars of knowledge. They are scholars of evil. They are calling to misguidance. And some of the likes of those people, they say now, there is no such thing as the evil eye. Stop talking about ridiculous stories and tales of evil eye. How can evil eye happen? There's no such thing. Some people, they say that. And this is complete and utter opposition to what the Quran and the Sunnah it indicates. The evil eye is real and it can occur. So, min hasad al-hasidi al-ayn allati yusibu al-mu'an. So from the evil of this envy is that the evil eye can occur to a person. يكون الرجل عنده كراهة لنعم الله على الغير
فَإِذَا أَحَسَّ بِنَفْسِهِ أَنَّ اللَّهَ أَنْعَمَ عَلَى فُلَانٍ بِنِعْمَةٍ خَرَجَ مِنْ نَفْسِهِ الْخَبِيثَ.
So when a person envies somebody else due to something they've got that he hasn't got, then that envy of his, something exits from himself, from this envy, which can then go and impact upon that person to cause the evil eye upon that person. And sometimes it can be, as Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen mentions, it could be such the impact of the evil eye that the one who gets it could die from it, or he could become ill from it, or he could become, lose his senses. He may lose his senses and become incapacitated in that way due to the evil eye upon him. And this is, or to the extent the Shaykh mentions, perhaps an individual, رُبَّمَا يُسِيبُ السَّيَّارَةَ بِالْعَيْنِ وَتَنْكَسِرُ أَوْ تَتَعَطَّلُ. Maybe sometimes, as Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen says, that an individual, he may envy a car that somebody has. Somebody has a beautiful car. Somebody has something that's fast. Something which is, it looks good. Something which is beautiful. Something which is desired by the people. Something which the people, they hold in high regard. Whatever that may be. Whether it's the Ford or it's the BMW or it's the Mercedes. Whichever type of car it may be. Maybe a person envies that particular car. Envies that this person has that beautiful car. The Shaykh says the evil eye could impact to the extent that something occurs to the car itself. The car breaks down. Or some other affair occurs to the car. The car, it malfunctions. It's possible that it could occur as a consequence of the evil eye upon that car, due to that person envying that this individual has this beautiful car. And so the evil eye could impact upon it, the car breaks down. The car, it breaks down. Or it could be other items, as the Shaykh mentions, other affairs where this evil eye can impact upon that individual. Here the Shaykh, he concludes this surah by explaining then, that here Allah has told us to seek refuge in all of these different things. From the darkness as it envelops, and from the blowings of the magicians into the knots, and from the evil of the envy of a person, to seek refuge in Allah from all of these affairs. What's common between these affairs? What's common between them is that they are all concealed, hidden affairs. The darkness of the night, you don't know what evil is out there in the darkness of the night, what could occur to you, it's concealed. You're walking out there and something occurs. It's concealed, it's dark. When the magicians do their thing, they do their magic, they do all of the stuff they do, it's concealed. Magic in Arabic, it actually comes from the word which indicates something concealed. Magic is concealed. Nobody knows how you do it. They get help from the shayateen and the jinn. So that's something concealed. And also the envy, it's concealed. Maybe a person, he envies you, but you don't know. So all of these things are things that are concealed from you. But you seek refuge in Allah from these affairs ever occurring. You ask Allah for protection and you ask Allah for refuge from the evils of these types of affairs that may occur to an individual. So then, as Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen says at the end, of course, you seek refuge in Allah as Allah commands us to do. And what else could you do then? How could you protect yourself from these types of evil affairs? From the greatest of the ways, as Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen rahimahullah, he mentions, is something many of the people they neglect, many of the people are ignorant of. All of these people, they come to you, they say, we need ruqya, we need this, we need that, magic is happening, evil eye is happening. And when you say to them, the very fundamental thing, which is, do you even recite your du'as every day? Do you recite the du'a when you wake up? Do you recite the du'as after the prayers, which are from the sunnah to do? Do you recite the du'as in the evening when you go to bed? Do you recite the du'as that the Prophet ﷺ has told us to recite? Ayatul Kursi, for example.
Ayatul Kursi, it is sunnah to recite it. How many times every day? Sunnah to recite Ayatul Kursi. How many times in the day?
Once in the morning, once in the evening, once after every prayer.
So that's how many? How many times is it sunnah to recite Ayatul Kursi during the day?
Depends on how many times you enter and exit the home.
Ten. Scholars generally mention eight. Eight general times where it's been mentioned in the sunnah for the recitation of Ayatul Kursi. Once in the morning, once in the evening, that's two. Once after every prayer, that's another five, seven altogether. And once when you go to sleep. Once in the morning, once in the evening, anytime in the evening, once before you go to sleep, and five times after the prayers. That's what the scholars mention, generally eight, that it is sunnah for you to recite. How many people do that? How many people actually recite these du'as? And there are so many of them. Authentic du'as. Recite when you leave the home, when you enter the home, when you wake up, when you go to bed. That is one of the greatest ways of protection, the remembrance of Allah. The shayateen cannot burden the remembrance of Allah. They cannot handle a person who has a heart filled with the remembrance of Allah. Reciting his du'as when he wakes up, reciting his du'as when he leaves the home, reciting his du'as as he enters the home, reciting the du'a when he's finished the wudu, reciting the du'as after the prayers, before he goes to bed. And as we'll come to see, these surahs, they are from the surahs that you can recite and you can spittle upon yourself and cover your body. We'll come to that in one of the future lessons, insha'Allah. So that is something the Shaykh says with great regret the people have neglected, and it is something that they should focus on, reciting the du'as in the morning, the evening, and you find them in The Fortress of the Muslim, the popular book that everybody knows. You'll find the du'as in there, the various types of du'as that are mentioned. So that is a brief tafsir regarding those two surahs. And that's where we'll have to conclude on today. Inshallah ta'ala, next week at the same time at 8 p.m. we'll carry on. And that will be the next surahs, Suratul Ikhlas, Qul Huwallahu Ahad, and also Suratul Masad, Tabbat Yada Abi Lahabin Watab. And if there is time also, Iza Ja'a Nasrullahi Wal Fath. So the next two or three surahs, insha'Allah ta'ala, we'll begin them next week at 8 p.m. Some questions. There's questions on this paper. Three of them, the first two are linked to the issue of eating food from what's known as the khatam. Is it permissible to eat that food? Really, it's this issue, it's about whether it's permissible to eat food which has been arranged for an event that is an innovated event. Is it permissible to eat the food which has been arranged for an innovated event? In that regard, the scholars, they say no. Generally, the scholars, they say if it's an innovated event, an innovated occasion, and they cook the food for that innovated event and that innovated occasion, then you don't go and participate in the eating of that food. You don't go and participate in the eating of that food, because then you are participating in the innovation. As a part of their innovation is to have that food and to eat that food. That is a part of that innovated event. So the scholars, they say, if there is an innovated event where they provide food as a part of that innovation, then you don't participate in eating that food. However, here it says, if there was leftover food afterwards in the home, that, inshallah, we'll find out from the fatwa of the scholars what exactly should be done to it, because then obviously there is the issue of wastage as well. But inshallah, we'll try to find a fatwa regarding specifically food which is from those events but not actually participating in the event. You're not going to be participating in the event, you're not going to be eating in that event, you're not going to be participating in the innovation, but there is food left over afterwards. The next day, is it permissible to eat that or not, or what should be done with it? That we'll try to find out. But the actual event itself and participating and eating that, that the scholars, they say you don't do. The second question is, if a family member gives you money as a gift and you know it is likely that the money has been earned through attending a khatam, is it permissible to accept this money and spend it on yourself? Again, this is an issue that the scholars, they mention regarding money which is earned in a haram manner. But here the question says, it is likely that the money has been earned through this innovated fashion. If a person isn't aware, you're not actually aware. You have an idea, perhaps it could be, but you're not actually aware. You don't actually know that it's come from this haram way or that haram way. Then you don't really have a reason to reject it. Then you don't have a reason to reject it. It could be the case, for example, a person, he has halal income. And a portion of the income is haram. 90% of his income is halal, but 10% of his income is haram. He gives you a gift, that person. Can you accept the gift or not? The scholars, they say in that instance, you could. Because 90% of his income is halal and 10% is haram. You don't know how he's bought this gift. You can't be certain that it's from the haram income. So you can take the gift because you don't know it's actually haram or that it's from the haram income or anything of the sort. So here similarly, if you're not actually aware, then you can. But if you were absolutely aware that this is money which has been earned in a haram manner by taking the wealth of the people in a haram manner through innovated events, then that person wants to give you a share of it, then perhaps you should not accept that if you are certain that it is from those haram means of income. Because the haram income, it is khabith. As it is mentioned, إِنَّ اللَّهَ طَيِّبٌ لَا يَقْبَلُ إِلَّا طَيِّبًا. Allah is طيب. Allah is from the pureness and the goodness and the righteousness. And Allah does not accept the righteous and the good and the pure. So anything which is impure, it is filthy, it is dirty, and that is not accepted by Allah. So if you are aware it is certainly haram, then you should not accept it. But if you're not, and you have no way of really knowing, the person has halal income, but a portion of it comes from these affairs, then you could still take the gift. The Sayyidina question, again, we'll bring the fatawa of the scholars inshallah next week. We'll keep this paper. And there are a couple of previous papers too. We'll try to find all of them to bring the answers. And the last one, when someone arrives from another country, should we go and visit them? That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Somebody arrives from a country to go and visit them. That's okay. As the companions, when they used to come back from journeying, then the other companions would greet them. There's no harm in visiting a person. In fact, it's good. Somebody comes from another country and you go to visit them for the ties of kinship. If they are from your relatives, then of course, even if they are from your friends, somebody has come and you go to visit them. There's nothing wrong with that at all. You go and visit them for the sake of love, for the sake of Allah, brotherhood and unity and kindness and relations. There's no harm in that whatsoever, and that's good. And when they leave again, should they come to visit us? Is there anything in the sunnah or the way of the salaf with regards to this? I'm not aware of any particular mannerism regarding that. Allahu a'lam. Maybe there are issues or narrations, but I'm not aware of any particular mannerism regarding that. We'll try to research further if there is a particular mannerism about the one coming and the one leaving. But I'm not aware of any particular mannerism. Allahu a'lam. We'll attempt to research if there is anything further. But otherwise, generally speaking, there's no harm in visiting when they are coming, when they are leaving. You could visit them send them off, and there's no harm in that, there's no issue in that. The remainder, inshallah, we'll try to find the statements of the scholars, we'll maybe tweet the answers, and we'll bring them next week as well, inshallah ta'ala. So unless there's any other questions.
Is there a particular reason why you find most of the magic performed in sub-Indian content and African and European countries?
I'm not aware if there's a particular reason like that, but it's known certain places it is widespread. Certain places, magic and those types of things are widespread. And that could be one of the reasons is where all trials and tribulations occur due to the lack of accurate knowledge of the Qur'an and the Sunnah and the people who are preaching it. When the accurate knowledge of the Qur'an and the Sunnah and the people preaching it, it becomes little. And there isn't much tawheed anywhere being taught or spread. Then shirk and bid'ah and those types of things become spread. The incorrect ideologies become spread. And those types of things like magic become widespread. That is one of the causes. The fact that people don't have the tawheed and the aqeedah, which is widespread and being taught. And instead they have the opposite, bid'ah and shirk. So it brings about this environment where it's very easy for the shayateen to whisper to the people and to take them down those false pathways.
I'm almost sorry. And what's the reality of this chilla, what they do the 40 days where they spend out in the darkness to tame this magic power, whatever they call it? I think it's known as chilla. Is it chilla?
I don't know.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
40 days out in the darkness to achieve magic powers.
It's very, very common practice in Pakistan and India.
Uh-huh. Well, there's no doubt, it's impermissible. Any means to magicians or to magic, 40 days outside in the darkness to achieve magic powers, all of this is from the acts that are impermissible, there's no doubt about that. It's all haram to engage in those types of activities. So we'll have to conclude there, the time is up for our booking. So we'll leave now, inshallah ta'ala, and we'll continue next week at 8 p.m.